My guest is the senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, Brian Hodges, supporting legalizing production of housing, property rights. And we didn't mention this, but he also publishes articles, lectures, property rights at law schools and legal conferences, and writes music and short fiction, but we've never got him to play any music or recite any short fiction. Maybe next time.
Yeah, let's set aside next June for that one.
you're thinking I'll forget. And before we jump in, I want him to revisit what we spoke about June 2020 about some very radical decisions being made up in Seattle about screening for tenants. And but I did want to mention quickly, my cousin lives in North Widmere, Long Island. And when they call something a single family residence, they literally mean like a family. Like in his little neighborhood, you can't rent to college students, like three college students. I just can't believe that that's somehow legal. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, I have. It's called an occupancy restriction. And in some communities, like in Ohio, these types of restrictions were declared unconstitutional. But unfortunately, the first time it went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, they upheld occupancy restrictions. And so it's an open question as to whether they can go on state by state. But it certainly does bring up some equal protection issues and some due process issues. Having government dictate the relationship of the people who can share a home together.
It does seem too far-reaching, although on the other hand, you can see the benefits of having it. It's pretty crazy. Okay, very interesting. Occupancy restrictions. Okay, Seattle rental laws. You were on last year, and I don't know where they were in June. Were they about to introduce it? Had it just passed?
Actually, the Seattle had introduced a host of its first wave of restrictions on residential landlords. This first wave was intended to severely restrict how landlords can choose their tenants. The city said that they were afraid that some landlords may be acting on subconscious bias when they select a tenant, when they look at things like a credit report or a criminal history report. So they, in a wave of regulation, took away the rights of landlords to choose who can live in their homes, forcing them to take the first person who applies, and without regard to criminal history, source of income, even offensive behavior. There was no discretion left for landlords. So we challenged those both in the state and federal courts. Unfortunately, we lost in the state court on the challenging the rule about taking the first person in line. And in the federal court has been sitting on a decision, the federal trial court, as to whether the ban on looking at criminal histories is unconstitutional. And the court's been sitting on that for over a year.
Now, I remember that where you have, you know, a landlord would have to take the first applicant, but the landlord could have credit report thresholds that first applicant would have to pass, right?
Yeah, that was how when these regulations are put in place, oftentimes it's like boiling a frog, you know, turning up the heat slower and slower so the frog doesn't notice how hot the water is before it's gone. Well, it started with the first person in line, but you can check the credit, you can check criminal history. Then we had the second regulation that says, no, you can't look at criminal history anymore. And now we have another in the pipeline that's saying you can't look at credit, you can't look at eviction history. So it's a bunch of serial regulations that are intended basically to take away landlords' discretion altogether.
Now, you know, on the one hand, I could see where you want to regulate a landlord to make sure he's not going to be biased against a race or against someone who's
handicapped
or maybe, you know, maybe not as affluent as the next person. But to say that you can't look at an eviction history as a basis for refusing to rent to somebody seems ludicrous.
Oh, it does. And, you know, like all well-intentioned laws, boy, this has direct impacts on the availability of homes. Since this slew of regulations have gone into effect, more and more small-time landlords have taken their property out of the rental market, shrinking the rental market, leaving most of the market up to the big corporate landlords who can take on the sort of risk of renting to people without having proven backgrounds. Mm. Now, it's the small landlords we need. They're the ones who typically are more flexible. And upon meeting, for example, one of our clients said they had a young, two young men who were recent college graduates, lacked the credit necessary to get into their place. But when they met them, they were so polite and ambitious that they discarded their credit criteria and rented to these two boys who wound up being some of their best tenants ever.
Those were the Menendez brothers, were they?
No. They're renting from the state, I believe.
They are. They let them in. God, we're up against the clock. Great. I know we could probably go on more and more of that, but it's sad when you mention that we're losing the small landlords because they can't take the risk. They have, you know, one house and they can't. You know, they can't take the risk where you have someone who's got a 500 or 1,000 rentals. You know, they could just chalk it off and write it off and say, well, we're going to have a percentage that are just going to not pay their rent, and we can live with that. So it's bizarre. Brian, is it Brian T. Hodges?
I'll answer to either.
I seem to recall that, but I don't have it written down. Brian Hodges, Pacific Legal Foundation Senior Attorney, thank you so much. Wealth of information. Always good talking with you, Brian.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Okay, we'll see you again.
Thanks.
Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. We'll take a quick break, come back with the weekly multiple listing sales update, and try to throw in the prior week. Nothing to do with Richard Pryor, but I wasn't here live.